You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
All right, Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, we got the state, we got the national, all the issues. And yes, indeed, like the dude just said, we are solid conservative and just plain right. Well, folks, this is one of those opportunities where I almost have to like say, how did I get this gig? I mean, this what a cool opportunity to have now. We're about to bring somebody on that you've heard us promoting now for the last 24 hours. Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson, a retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, a former Republican congressional candidate out in California. He ran in California 7. He was a combat pilot flying C-141s, taking 82nd Airborne Paratroopers into Grenada, if I recall. But he also was a distinguished White House military aide, which is a select community. He actually carried the football for President Clinton. And then most notably, where he became, you know, I became aware of him, was when he wrote a book called Dereliction of Duty. He's written several books, New York Times bestsellers, two of them. One of them, though, was Dereliction of Duty, talking about his time in the Clinton administration. He served from 1996 to 98 as the military aide to President Clinton, carrying the nuclear football. He also was the operational commander there for all military units assigned to the White House, which includes Air Force One, Marine One, and others. I love the fact, though, that he's a frequent public speaker, but he's a conservative public speaker. He's been a frequent guest on talk shows around the country. And I think one of the things that gives me the biggest kick is the reason why I have a radio show is because of Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh passed away. I was asked to come start a show to fill the three-hour block the station had missing. And so my next guest has actually been on the air with Rush Limbaugh. But he believes in restoring our nation's constitutional principles, it says right here in his bio. Buzz Patterson, how are you doing?
Fantastic, sir. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for making some time for us today on Right Side Radio.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Well, I appreciate it. Listen, you first of all, thank you for your service. I say that to all the veterans who come on the show. We have a lot of them.
And thank you for yours.
Well, I appreciate that.
Absolutely. It's a big family, and regardless of service, regardless of branch, you know, we're all brothers and sisters. So I salute you too.
Well, thank you very much. And you flew C-141s is one of the airframes. I know you said that you flew the most, and I've jumped a few 141s, and I like the fact that you've got the wind deflector on the jump door on those you don't have on the C-130s.
Yes, sir. It's a little easier to walk out of that thing, but yeah. I don't know if I'd ever dropped you, Phil, but I flew probably maybe a couple of hundred airdrop missions. So, and you guys were always the best. You're right. 82nd Airborne in Grenada. I dropped those guys. So,
yeah, in fact, I read your book. You actually came in. You were one of the first ones on the ground to drop airdrop troops or to air land troops. And it was a hot LZ when you came in, wasn't it?
It was. They were shooting. So yeah, I was in twice in the first 24 hours. So we came in and dropped, and then we came back about 8 hours later, we came back down with the 82nd and landed too. So we offloaded them once we figured out. We didn't know what the runway was going to look like. We were actually, Phil, given when I got the briefing before I flew down there. I was the second airplane on the ground. When I got the briefing to go down there, they handed me a tourist map of Grenada.
Tourist map, yeah.
And they said, okay, the runway is here at Point Salinas, and we don't know. It's about 8,000 feet long. We think they're doing construction. There might be a big ditch right in the middle. And I said, you think there might be? Or and we, no kidding. We landed, and I was just waiting for that ditch to happen, but it never happened. So
there's wheels down, and there's wheels way down at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well,
and it's funny you say that, because my first tour was in Afghanistan at the beginning of the war, and the best map that I had literally came out of the back of a National Geographic magazine. It was the best map I had. And
sometimes our intel guys don't do it right.
No kidding. Well, listen, man, you served through a number of years. I mean, you got commissioned. You and I were comparing notes off air. You got commissioned a few years ahead of me in the early 80s. So you were coming out of the hollow years. You were in the early years of Reagan. Then you survived the Clinton years. But you survived them partly in the White House with President Clinton. And so, first of all, for the audience's benefit, how do you get selected for a White House gig like that?
You you can apply. So the military, it has been a military aid for every president since George Washington. And then when John F. Kennedy was president, and nuclear weapons were a thing, and the Cuban Missile Crisis happened, by the way, John F. Kennedy introduced the position to also carry the nuclear football, which is the nation's nuclear capability, basically. But you can't apply for that. They don't want people applying. So I was one of six that got called. I was a squadron commander, flew out to Washington, D.C., and they interviewed me. I had no idea the position even existed. Let me put it in that. I knew there was a nuclear football. I knew somebody was carrying it around, but I didn't know, you know, anything like that. So they hired me. So I was one of five. There was an Army guy, you know, a Coast Guard lady, a Marine, Navy, and me. And I was one of five. So we alternated responsibilities. And then I became the senior military aide in the last 18 months of my time there.
Well, and I remember, too, from your book that you were stationed at Travis Air Force Base at the time, if I recall correctly. And I think you even said, too, that when you were interviewing, they said, why do you want the job? And you said, I don't know that I want this job.
Exactly. I was dating my now wife, and I love Northern California. I was right outside of Napa Valley, and I was flying airplanes all over the world. And Leon Panetta said, why do you want this job? And I said, I don't know that I do. And and he said, well, if we offer it to you, will you take it? And I said, yeah, I will.
That's a heck of an interview right there. I mean, Boomer's over here laughing off to the side. Just so you know. That's kind of the way I interview Boomer. Why do you want this job? I don't know that I want this job. But anyway. Well, listen, you said in your book that Clinton inherited the the most powerful fighting force in the history of the world at that particular point.
Right.
And then, you know, but his successor wound up inheriting one that was, you know, almost incapable of prosecuting a two-front war.
Correct.
It was a difficult time. I served during that time as well. My father was also on active duty prior to me, and I've got family members on active duty now. Okay, that's right. I remember seeing that. But it's amazing to watch. My dad talked about serving through the Carter era. He was a Vietnam vet who then continued to serve through into the early 80s, and he talked about the hollow army of the Carter era. Well, we pretty much had a hollow army almost in the Clinton era, and you got to watch it firsthand. And one of the things that really struck me was in your book, I believe you described the fact that it was serving in the White House that actually helped you form your conservative bona fides and principles and the things you now stand on as an individual today.
Absolutely. I'll tell you this, Phil. You know, I walked into that job, and I was, you know, as you, an Air Force, and just an officer, and saluting smartly and doing everything that my commanders told me to do and doing it the best of my ability. And I remember I got to the White House, I was totally politically apathetic. And then 2 years later, walking out of the White House, I was not apathetic anymore. I had the fire lit underneath me because of what I had seen in those 2 years. It was disturbing, troubling. And, you know, and you understand this mindset, right? You walk into an organization, a civilian organization, which is non-military, and you're one of like just a handful of military guys. So you're walking in with your military background, your history. You walk in, you're expecting things to be efficient, organized. None of that. And it was apparent to me in about a day and a half that the White House is being run much more poorly than the worst Air Force flying squadron I had ever been associated with. And My steel was honed during those 2 years, and that's when I was able to start writing books. I retired from the Air Force in 2001. I started writing, you know, books about that legally. I was like, okay, I got to tell the story. I got to get this out there. This is getting off my chest. If nothing else, if it sells two books, I got to tell the story. So that's what came out of my 2 years at the White House.
Well, I remember the book coming out, and it made waves. I mean, it not only came out, it came out hard and became a New York Times bestseller, Dereliction of Duty, under your name, still in print today. I wish I'd brought a copy with me. I didn't even think about the fact where, you know, I could hold it up right now, but
hey, you know what?
Show it. There you go. Plug that book. There you go. Dereliction of Duty. And it has Clinton with the golf tee in his mouth, which, by the way, that's a great segue to one of the stories. I think it was chapter two. You talked about the fact that Sandy Berger was doing everything he could to get hold of the president who was watching a golf tournament and did not want to return the call. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. So I was with President Clinton on the golf course. You know, there's the President's Cup golf tournament where the U.S. plays against the rest of the world, or mostly Europe, but the rest of the world. And, you know, over in Iraq, Saddam Hussein was raising hell and killing a bunch of Kurds in the northern part of Iraq. And Sandy Berger called. So I was the call screener when I was with the president away from the White House. So the call came into me from Berger. He goes, "Can I talk to the president?" And I said, "You know, he's watching golf, but I'll approach him." I did. So I approached him three times, Phil. And the deal was that the Berger wanted us to launch fighters, U.S. fighters, and to go suppress the Republican Guard and push them back down south and protect the Kurds. And so it was a life or death situation. And President Clinton was simply too busy. So he rebuffed me three times. He told me he'd call Berger back on the way back to the White House in the back of the limo. And that night, Saddam murdered thousands of Kurds, and we could have stopped it. We had fighters on alert. They were all gassed up and ready to go, and Bill Clinton was too busy watching Tiger Woods putt.
Well, I'll be honest with you, and we're about to take a break right now, but let's do this. I want to come back to that, because that's not the only time that he had an opportunity to stop the bad guys and chose not to because he was too busy ghosting out on the phone calls. But yeah, there's a story about Osama bin Laden. So I tell you what, Boomer, let's go ahead and move to the break right now. We'll do that. Folks, you're listening to an amazing interview with a guy who's had an amazing career, retired Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson, congressional candidate out there in California, written a number of New York Times bestsellers, but he's literally talking about the inside with Democrat administrations, in this case, Clinton. More to come. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, spanning all over North Alabama, and we are solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time, I like to say. We are back right now with Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson, who had an amazing career as an Air Force pilot and then got selected for White House duty, carrying the nuclear football for Bill Clinton, wrote a book about it called Dereliction of Duty, and we're discussing aspects of that book. And hey, Buzz, so right before that last break, which, by the way, isn't it fitting that we played Don't Look Back, and yet we're looking back right now with it. So,
I love it.
Yeah. That's the music of our era right there, you and I. So.
Absolutely. Boston.
There you go. But hey, we were telling the story there. So Clinton was watching a golf tournament, did not want to take Sandy Berger's phone call and stop Iraqi Republican Guard forces from killing Kurds. But that was not the only time, though, that you really dealt with, where's the president? Will he take the call? Right. Osama bin Laden, tell that story if you would.
Yeah, one night I was just hanging out down in the. So as a military aide, you have an office in the White House and a bedroom in the White House. So I essentially lived there. So I used to go down and hang out in the sit room and hang out with those guys and girls, because they were mostly military and CIA and FBI folks, and they were kind of fun. And the phone call comes in, and it's CIA and the military have Osama bin Laden locked up and ready to be taken out. We're like there in Afghanistan.
This is like, what, 3 years prior to 9/11, right?
It's 4 years.
4 years.
4 years prior. Yeah. So I'm sitting there, watch this. So we've got the guys, the operators on the ground in Afghanistan who are now on the phone with the White House trying to get the President Clinton to get Clinton to go ahead and authorize the attack. And so I'm sitting there watching this, like, you know, what in the hell is going on? So the sit room could not get, they could not get Clinton on the phone for at least an hour. And then when they finally did, the window had closed. You know, you understand, you've got your guys there, you've got your operators there, you've got bin Laden. And apparently Clinton also said that he didn't want to pull the trigger because, eventually, he said he didn't want to pull the trigger because of there were innocents in the compound. So that was 4 years, Bill, prior to 9/11. And I 100% think that that night, if he had just been, if we'd been able to reach him, number one, and then secondarily, if he had just said, you know, yeah, pull the trigger, let's go get him. But he didn't do any of those things. He wouldn't answer the phone call.
I mean, 4 years later, the entire world changed. So 9/11 happens. And
all of our lives changed. Our families' lives changed. The world changed forever. Because Bill Clinton was simply, Phil, he was simply risk averse. He didn't want to do anything that would affect the polls negatively. He didn't want to be a Jimmy Carter in terms of like a Desert One kind of situation. You know, he kind of got his butt kicked in Somalia and he Black Hawk down and he, which was also an operational part of that. But I think that Black Hawk down scarred him so badly. He didn't want to make a decision that might negatively affect him in the polls.
It's funny you say that because we've had Mike Durant on this show multiple times. You may remember Mike Durant was the pilot who was held captive by the Somali warlords Farah Adid in Black Hawk Down, and Mike says the same thing. In fact, he said that Sandy Berger was one of the most disappointing individuals that he had ever. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something along those lines that Sandy Berger was one of the most disappointing individuals he ever saw. That there was a lack of decisiveness. And the mission creep of Somalia really just was part of the problem too.
Yeah, well, I knew Sandy Berger. He passed away, not too long ago with cancer. But I knew Sandy Berger, and he was just an unmade bed. And he was a socialist, semi-communist, and he and Clinton were never able to really kind of get together and kind of forge a relationship that affected the military and national security. So, yeah, he was the wrong guy at the absolutely wrong time.
Well, a lot of things happened during your tenure that still kind of blow my mind. So your tenure, I'm talking about at the White House. So there was, aside from the fact that, I mean, could have taken out Osama bin Laden several years prior, could have stopped the mass murder of Kurds, who were our allies, basically, that in that region,
yes.
And still are. But then on top of that, there was an entire, like, this was a big deal when Clinton lost the nuclear codes. And I think that was chapter 3 of your book. But when Clinton, like, lost his codes and didn't even know where they were, and I remember reading the book, I could almost feel the sense of dumbfoundedness that you had when you realized the president said, I don't know where they are. Tell that story. I tell you what, how much time we got? Remember, we got time to make that whole story happen or what?
Yeah, we got about a minute before our
break. Well, let's intro the story because it's so good. We can lay this foundation and come back and finish it right after the break.
This is a fantastic story, and I've been talking about it a lot on social media recently. But so I was the first person on President Clinton's schedule this morning in January of 1998. And I was walking in, that nobody else was there yet. And I walk in to see the President of the United States. And then I understand the biggest disappointment my entire Air Force career was right there in front of me. And we can, I guess, pick this up on the other side of the break.
Okay. Yeah. The biggest, there's a 20 year span of time that he says this particular moment was the biggest disappointment of his military career. I'll tell you what, Boomer, let's go ahead and take the break, brother. We will come right back. When you hear this story, folks, if you have not read the book, Dereliction of Duty, you're going to want to go out and buy it. It is that amazing. A president of the United States constitutionally mandated to protect and defend the interests of this nation. And it appears he had a little trouble doing it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, laughing with Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson. We will be right back. All right, Phil Williams, we are back. Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, making it cool to be a conservative. So we are right now with Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson. We've been doing an interview about his career, his time in the White House, his book, Dereliction of Duty, which is one of, I think, four that he's written, two of which were New York Times bestsellers, including the one we're talking about, Dereliction of Duty. We just laid the foundation for a story, Buzz, about what you described as the most disappointing moment of your entire 20-year military career. and it was President Clinton and his nuclear codes. Talk about it.
Yeah. So quickly for the listeners. So the president has a set of codes, which are like a credit card size document that he keeps on this person somewhere. And the military aide, me, has the nuclear football. So it takes the nuclear codes and the football through the Pentagon to make start turning keys and nuclear missiles flying around the world, God forbid. So I walk in this morning, and my job was just to he asked me to come in quarterly to say, okay, he would say, let's go over the process again. Let's talk about how the launch codes work. Let's talk about, and he would ask me generic military questions too, just about random things. But so I walk in this morning, and this is the same morning, Phil, that the Monica Lewinsky affair actually hit the national press.
Oh, that was a bad day.
Yeah. And I walked in, and here he is. He's at Clinton's at the desk and in the Oval. He's got his head in his hands. Eyes are bloodshot. He's been up all night. It's obvious. And you know that he knows, I know that he knows that he's been caught. So I said, sir, and I was the first person on the schedule, 7 a.m. I can remember it distinctly. And I said, sir, I can come back if this is a difficult time, and I knew exactly what had happened. So with Monica, and he goes, yeah, if you don't mind. And I said, well, just before I leave, just do me one, can you just authenticate that you have the nuclear codes? Again, it's a credit card size thing. And Bill Clinton kept them in his pants pocket, his front right pants pocket. I said, can you just confirm that you had the nuclear codes? And he says, well, I don't have them. And I said, well, so we started a search all around the White House, Phil.
I just don't have them. That's all he said was, I don't have them.
I don't have them. And then so I went back down to the Oval and talked to him. I said, sir, we can't find them. How long has it been? And he said, since you last saw them, where did you last see them? He goes, I can't recall. And I said, has it been days? And he goes, he says, I don't know. I said, it's been weeks. He says, I don't know. I said, has it been months? He goes, I don't know. So here we have the commander in chief, Phil, that has lost the nuclear codes. And we as the U.S., if we had been launched on by Russia or China or North Korea or whoever, we didn't have the ability to retaliate. And so I called the Pentagon and told the guys at the National Military Command Center that they had lost the codes. They were incredulous.
That's a heck of a phone call right there.
It never happened before. And so the Pentagon being the Pentagon, they jumped to their butts and got everything done and got some codes the next day. But the moral of the story, Phil, was that, he was our commander in chief and he has the most important military document in the history of mankind. He's supposed to carry around with him 24/7 and he lost it. And not only did he lose it, but he didn't confess that he had lost it for who knows how long. And then when I confronted him with it, he asked me not to go to the press or say anything or mention it. And I didn't. I promised. I said I wouldn't until I retired from the Air Force and wrote my first book. And it's all in there.
So as far as we know, Monica does not have the nuclear codes. That's what
Monica. Well, we don't. She might still. I don't know. Some kind of I don't know,
Newsflash on Right Side Radio. Oh my gosh.
We never did find them. They were never recovered and we don't know, where they went. And but the fact that he didn't care, which was dereliction of duty, which is what why I wrote the book.
Yeah. And he didn't bother to tell anybody until he was confronted. That's just amazing to me. I mean, I get it. If something happens and he's out somewhere and it falls out of his pocket because he carries them in his pocket and he comes and says, guys, I don't know where they are. We got to get a replacement, change the codes, whatever.
Right.
No, he didn't even know when's the last time he saw them. That's so amazing.
Did. Yeah. It's, we would be thrown in Leavenworth.
Yeah.
For a long time.
And probably still there. So let me ask you this, though. I mean, you said in your book, and you even said to me right off the air a moment ago, that Bill Clinton, as a personality, though, he was cool to hang out with. Y'all jogged together. You had to spend a lot of personal time with him because you had to be by his side constantly. And so as a person, he was okay to be around. You enjoyed his company, so to speak. But then there's Hillary Clinton, which, from reading your book, the first image I got was of that movie, The Devil Wears Prada, when the main character comes walking in, everybody's jumping through hoops to get out of her way, hide in their cubicles, run around, get her coffee just right. And that was literally the way it was with Hillary Clinton in your book.
Absolutely. I was warned by my predecessor. He says, you know, you can do a lot of things in this job, and you got to be very careful about certain people. But he said, you know, you can upset Bill and he'll get over it, but don't piss her off, because she will rip your heart out.
Wow.
And that was the best advice I ever got. That was the guy I took over for. And so I learned very quickly that was a really good advice. And, you know, there were a couple of things that really affected me, Phil, when I first got there. The first thing is, maybe about a week into my time there, she tried to prohibit military personnel from wearing their uniforms in the White House.
Wow.
She denies this to this day, but I was the one who was asked to make this happen. And I went to the Secret Service, said, this is just a stupid idea. You know, we need to have, I mean, he's the commander in chief, number one. So he needs to have the military thing around him.
Right.
But number two, I'm carrying the nuclear football, and, you know, and I can't just be looking like another Secret Service guy with, you know, a suit and shades. And you guys need to be able to find me in a moment's notice. And so she finally relented on that. The other thing that really bothered me about her early on was that I was told that when she's walking around the White House, she doesn't want to have to interact with anybody. So if you hear that she's moving, or you see her moving, or you think she might be moving, you were supposed to dive into office spaces and not and avoid her facial interaction.
I got to ask, though, every president has a nickname call sign the Secret Service used. Did they have a call sign for her? Was it Cruella? What did they call her?
No. Well, officially it was Evergreen.
Evergreen.
Evergreen was her official name, but she got called all kinds of things. You know, and the only sanity, Phil, from my entire time there was hanging out with the Secret Service guys and girls, and they called her a lot of things. And it was so much fun because they would draw straws to see who had to be on her detail. Wow. So, and the short straw lost. So they were everybody kind of wanted to be around Bill, not so much Hill.
Oh my gosh! Well, hey, Boomer, how much time we got? We doing good? How much time we got?
We got a few minutes.
Got a few minutes. Yeah, I want to segue off of that, and I don't want to lose the opportunity here. So, I can't help but think. I mean, so you've come out of the Clinton administration. You watched missed opportunities. I mean, his personality aside, he had a winsome personality. Everybody, you could like Bill Clinton and not like President Bill Clinton.
Right.
But nonetheless, then you also had the Hillary Clinton thing. You had missed opportunities. You had lost nuclear codes. The formation of your book, Dereliction of Duty. But one thing that really strikes me as that last conversation there about Hillary is we came within like a hair's breadth of having her as our president of the United States in 2016. I mean, that close to having the person that caused people to jump out of the hallways become the next president of the United States.
Yeah, which is exactly why I retired from Delta. In 2016, I was a Delta Airlines pilot, and I saw that she was running, and I said, I can't sit on the sidelines in a cockpit at 35,000 feet and not fight this lady. And I'll tell you what, Phil, I think she's going to run again. I think Biden is just a dead man walking, and I think Hillary's going to pop up again. She's getting more and more prevalent, and I'll tell you, I promise, I'll be out there fighting her tooth and nail. I'm still walking around, unlike a lot of other people.
I was gonna say.
So I wait for that. I'm joking at this point, but no, she has a propensity to go after people, and she went after me in the press many times, and I have no problem preventing her from being our next commander in chief and president of the United States, because she is ill-equipped and she's evil, she's profane, and she's vindictive.
Well, there's a soundbite that runs in the next political cycle, but yeah, I'll be honest with you. As an outsider looking in, I can see that. You know, it's one of those things where I watch the personality, I see the things that happen, and you also see the destruction of lives that don't agree with her in her immediate circle, and If you want to leave California and move to free America here in Alabama, just come on down.
Well, you know what? We're thinking about it. We're looking around. You know, I've had a couple of I've lived in Alabama a couple of times. I miss it. I miss the South. My parents live in Atlanta, outside of Atlanta. And we're looking at northern Alabama and southern Tennessee.
That's exactly where we are.
I'm a North Carolina boy, so I got to get back. You can't even buy grits in California, so I got to get back.
Can't buy grits. But I will tell you this, though. Here's what's funny, and this is just a total aside before we get to our last topics of the day. But But we podcast this show as well as airing it live every day for 3 hours every day and across most of the northern half of the state. We podcast the show. Our second biggest podcast audience is California. I don't know what happened, but we have hundreds of people that download this show in California. There's good folks out there, and I know that for a fact.
There are great folks out here. There are conservative pockets for sure. Yeah. And the weather's beautiful. And we're here because our kids are thriving. And when they're all off and gone to college and beyond, and we'll be coming back to the South.
Well, Buzz, how are we doing on time? Boomer, are we about ready to go to a break? All right, let's do this. Buzz, I want to come back from this last break and finish up our discussion together. I see a lot of parallels from the things that you experienced in the Clinton administration, the things that became the underpinnings of your book, Dereliction of Duty, the things you still try to oppose these days. I see a lot of parallels in what we're seeing today in the current administration. I want to talk about that when we get back. Does that go with you?
Fantastic.
All right, Boomer, let's move it to a break, brother. We will do that right now. Folks, we're having an amazing interview. This is going to be our biggest podcast, I can tell you. It's going to wind up getting lots of replays. But Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, with Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson, author of Dereliction of Duty. We'll be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid, conservative, and just plain right. All right, listen, we are back right now with Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson. I've enjoyed this thoroughly. In fact, I think we've had as much fun off the air as we have on the air. But
no doubt.
Listen, Buzz, again, thank you for your service and the things that you've had a chance to be a part of. But thank you also for, I guess I'd say, for being in the mix on the things that you believe in and, you know, and restoring some of the values that are so missing right now in modern culture. We almost had Hillary Clinton as president. Who knows what her political future is? And I know you intend to oppose that, but I would anticipate, just from what little I know of you now, that you would be opposing anyone who stood for what she stands for. That being said, there was so much in your book about the Clinton era sort of gutting the military. They expanded the geographic deployments of the military. We had people going left and right, all points of the compass. But at the same time, they reduced the scale of every single one of the service branches and really gutted out the capabilities. And then at the same time, there were any number of things. There was one place in your book I actually noted, I made a note of it. In Chapter 5, you talked about there were attempts to eliminate masculinist attitudes in the military. And yet here we are today. I feel like it's deja vu all over again. What are you seeing right now in modern culture compared to where you were then?
Well, our military has taken a huge hit, Bill. I think we can agree on that. I think that we have become too woke. Our military leaders, you know, General Milley and Secretary Austin, they're political puppets. You know, they're doing the beck and call of Biden in a very woke culture. And, you know, when you're prioritizing diversity and inclusion and equity training over getting an airplane in the air or learning how to drive a tank or launching a ship in the Navy, you know, we're spending way too much time on that side of the spectrum and not nearly enough time on this side of the spectrum, which is for war fighting capabilities, success. You know, we're not winning wars, Phil. We're just not. And I think we're going in the wrong direction. I think it started under Clinton. I saw it firsthand, the degradation of the military, the morale, and then President George W. Bush, for all of his warts and problems. You know, he did kind of build the military back, and we got involved in a couple of things, as you experienced firsthand. In the Middle East. And then, you know, we had Obama, who then again brought down the military, brought down the morale, brought down the funding, brought down the capabilities. Which, you know, I'm a big capabilities guy. If it doesn't add value to being in the military and to winning wars and successfully operating around the world, then I don't want it. As a commander, you understand this. As a commander, you want the resources, you want the mission, and then you want people to get out of the way. And we're not doing that right now. We're doing the exact opposite. So, I mean, the Pentagon has become so woke. And I think Clinton started it. But I think where we are with Obama right now in the current administration, with Biden right now in the current administration, Obama, Biden slash, because they're pretty much one and the same.
Yeah.
I just think we're heading down the wrong path, and we're going to continue to lose wars if we don't correct course.
Well, here we are right now. You and I are having this discussion during the time frame of the 1 year anniversary of the debacle pullout in Afghanistan. And I, by the way, I've said it openly, having served at the beginning of the war in Afghanistan, and then it lasted for 20 years. I am fully cognizant of the fact that wars have to end at some point. But then again, you can also leave an enduring presence. We're still in Japan, we're still in Germany, we're still in Korea. I don't know how you feel about that, but I feel like we sacrificed all the blood and treasure by means of a reckless, sort of a helter-skelter pullout that actually caused the loss of life, and I think has also had a morale killer among the troops.
Well, yeah, we're having a hard time recruiting people in the military right now across all the branches because people don't want to serve this kind of leadership and this kind of, tomfoolery. You know, I was involved in several evacuation scenarios in my military career, and the one in Afghanistan was the absolute worst I've ever seen executed in my entire life. You don't pull the shooters out first and then get the innocents out last. You put the assets in, you get the innocents out, and then you start pulling the shooters out because you don't want people taking over. And we also got out of the military airport that we had there that 1,000 to 1,500 U.S. military personnel could have secured Bagram, and we could have done all of that there with absolutely no problem. And here we had the Biden administration and the State Department doing the exact opposite. And you're right, we lost 13,000. You know, you saw the video of the C-17 taken off with the Afghanis getting onto it. You know,
exactly.
If I had been that aircraft commander, I would have done exactly the same thing. I would say, you know, we're getting the hell out of here. They had like 600 people in the back of that airplane, and they had a couple hanging on the side. I would have done the exact same thing. And that is poor planning and execution. And that's on Biden, and that's on the Milley and Austin. And I just think, you know, we lost innocence, a lot of innocence that day, and our military personnel should not have been in that situation.
We lost innocence, and we also lost world presence, in my opinion, that day.
100%. And that's why Putin's in Ukraine.
Yeah, I totally agree. And back to your point about the, you said it was a C-17 or a C-5, whatever it was lifting off. It had the people hanging on the sides of it. I mean, first of all, you can never say that was a secure airfield if you can have masses of humanity rush out onto an airstrip where military aircraft are departing and hang on the sides of the airplane. There's no way that was a secure facility.
That's chaos. That's Vietnam 1974-75. That is complete chaos, and that was preventable, and our senior leadership failed. And that's why I'm still out here calling this stuff out.
Well, I've said on this show multiple times, it took a Carter to bring us a Reagan. My hope is, my prayer is, that what we're going to see is a repeat of that type of sentiment, that it took a Carter to bring us a Reagan. I am praying that it's going to take this, just this Biden to take us into the next Reagan. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, I don't know who it's going to be. I mean, I've got my hopes that it's going to be either Trump or DeSantis, but I think that it's time. I mean, Trump, whatever you think about him personally, he was the right guy at the right time.
Well, he was.
Yes. And now we need somebody at the right. We need the right guy or girl at the right time.
For such a time as this. Listen, Buzz, you've had an amazing career. We certainly appreciate your time today. The book is Dereliction of Duty, among others. Do you have a website they can find or anything like that you wanted to go to?
I'm all over social media. My website, I don't have one. So I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Getter and social at Buzz Patterson.
All right, Buzz, we appreciate you. Move to North Alabama. We'll take you, brother.
Hey, we'll be there soon.
All right, man. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.